Smart litigators find winning arguments faster with Bloomberg Law. Our market-leading docket coverage has AI-driven search and analytics, customized alerts, and expanded state court coverage. And that's not all. Visit pro.bloomberglaw.com for everything you need to win.
Welcome to Cases and Controversies, a Supreme Court podcast by Bloomberg Law. I'm Lydia Wheeler.
And I'm David Schultz, filling in for Kimberly Robinson, who's out this week.
Hey, David.
Hi.
Thanks for doing double duty here as both our co-host and producer. I really wanted to chat with someone about the arguments in the court's final case of the term, so I'm glad to be talking with you about Thursday's proceedings in former President Donald Trump's appeal for immunity from criminal charges related to his efforts to overturn the 2020 election results. What do you say we unpack those for our listeners and give some highlights?
Let's do it. And I was actually a little surprised when I was listening to the arguments because, you know, before the case, a lot of legal scholars said Trump would almost be laughed out of the court in his, you know, quest for absolute immunity for everything that he did during his presidency. And I don't think that he was laughed out of the court. What do you think?
No, I don't think so. The court didn't seem to agree with his claim for blanket immunity from all criminal prosecutions, but they did seem like they might rule he has some immunity. You know, several members of the court's conservative wing, you know, voiced concern about basically opening the door to future prosecutions. I'm talking about Justice Samuel Alito in this exchange, particularly with the government's lawyer, Michael Dreeben.
I mean, the presidents have to make a lot of tough decisions about enforcing the law, and they have to make decisions about questions that are unsettled, and they have to make decisions based on the information that's available. Do you really — did I understand you to say, well, you know, if he makes a mistake, he makes a mistake. He's subject to the criminal laws just like anybody else?
But Dreeben pointed out that presidents have access to legal advice on everything they do. You know, he said making a mistake isn't what lands you in a criminal prosecution.
Yeah. And Justice Kagan also mentioned that the president's subordinates definitely do not enjoy immunity, although they have to make tough decisions as well. So, you know, if why don't we grant, you know, everyone in the executive branch immunity? But in terms of Alito's perspective, you know, not totally surprising there. Did anyone else sort of share his concerns?
Yeah, Justice Brett Kavanaugh said that he was worried about the long term effects of leaving presidents basically open to criminal prosecutions for their official acts, you know, mostly worried about their successors coming in and bringing charges against them.
It's going to cycle back and be used against the current president or the next president or and the next president and the next president after that.
And Justice Alito, of course, was worried about this, too. You know, the government's lawyer, Michael Dreeben, mentioned that there are a lot of protections against a bogus prosecution from a president to a former president. But Justice Alito pointed out it's not as difficult as it maybe could be or should be to prosecute someone because it's very easy to get an indictment.
There's the old saw about indicting a ham sandwich.
Yes, but I think Justice Alito,
you had a lot of experience in the Justice Department. You come across a lot of cases where the U.S. attorney or another federal prosecutor really wanted to indict a case and the grand jury refused to do so.
There are such cases.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. But I think that the other
every
level
once
of,
in a while there's an eclipse, too.
Well, I think that that's
so Donald Trump is saying that the charges against him were based on official acts that he took and that the only way to prosecute him for those is through the impeachment process. Did the court agree with that?
So there was actually a lot of debate during the arguments about what constitutes an official act of the presidency and where the justices should be drawing the line. I mean, the liberal justices went through several hypotheticals. Justice Elena Kagan specifically asked Trump's lawyer, John Sauer, if the president could stage a coup.
Well, he's gone. Let's say this president who ordered the military to stage a coup. He's no longer president. He wasn't impeached. He couldn't be impeached. But he ordered the military to stage a coup, and you're saying that's an official act.
I think it would depend.
That's immune.
I think it would depend on the circumstances whether it was an official act. If it were an official act, again, he would have to be impeached.
Well, what does that mean, depend on the circumstances? He was the president. He is the commander-in-chief. He talks to his generals all the time, and he told the generals, I don't feel like leaving office. I want to stage a coup. Is that immune?
And then Justice Amy Coney Barrett also questioned Sauer on what is an official act, but she went through the specific allegations against Trump.
That's right, she did. And I think that led to some surprising concessions from Trump's lawyer. You know, she said even if the court decides or assumes there's some immunity for official acts, that the special counsel is saying here that, you know, there were sufficient private acts alleged in the indictment for the trial to begin immediately.
And I want to know if you agree or disagree about the characterization of these acts as private. Petitioner turned to a private attorney, was willing to spread knowingly false claims of election fraud to spearhead his challenges to the election results. Private?
As alleged. I mean, we dispute the allegation, but
of
that
course.
Sounds private to me.
Sounds private. Petitioner conspired with another private attorney who caused the filing in court of a verification signed by petitioner that contained false allegations to support a challenge.
That private. Also sounds private.
But Chief Justice Roberts had an interesting point, which is that if you take away all the official acts and you only can prosecute Trump for private acts, there's not much there since they're so linked. They're almost inextricable. So, I mean, he referred to that as a one-legged stool.
Well, if you expunge the official part from the indictment, how do you — I mean, that's like a one-legged stool, right? I mean, giving somebody money isn't bribery unless you get something in exchange. And if what you get in exchange is to become the ambassador to a particular country, that is official, the appointment. It's within the president's prerogatives. The unofficial part is I'm going to get $1 million for it. So if you say you have to expunge the official part, how does that go forward?
All right, Lydia, well, what does the court do with all this?
Well, at least three justices, I'm thinking Justice Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and even Chief Justice John Roberts, seemed ready to just send this case back to the trial court to figure it out and let them decide in what they say the first instance, you know, what is an official act of the presidency versus private conduct in Trump's case. You know, Roberts said that wasn't an analysis that the lower court did.
What concerns me is, as you know, the Court of Appeals did not get into a focused consideration of what acts we're talking about or what documents we're talking about because of its adoption of what you termed, and I agree quite correctly, as a tautological statement. Because the fact of prosecution was enough to take away any official immunity, the fact of prosecution, they had no need to look at what courts normally look at when you're talking about a privilege or immunity question.
Okay, but let's talk about the implications here because, you know, technically, if the court remands the case, that's not a win for Trump. But really, I think it sounds like it would be a win and mainly due to timing. Can you get into that?
Oh, right. I definitely think it would be still be a win for Donald Trump here. I mean, any court analysis is going to require more litigation, and more litigation takes time. And so if this is delayed until after the election, it's not clear what would happen if he were to win a second term. You know, legal scholars have said that he could try to kill this case, you know, even if it were to go forward. It's not clear that the president doesn't have the power to pardon himself. So, and that was actually a question that came up during the arguments. You know, Justice Alito really wanted to know what the Justice Department's stance on that is.
On the question of whether a president has the authority to pardon himself, which came up earlier in the argument, what's the answer to that question?
I don't believe the Department of Justice has taken a position. The only authority that I'm aware of is a member of the Office of Legal Counsel wrote on a memorandum that there is no self-pardon authority. As far as I know, the department has not addressed it further. And, of course, this court had not addressed it either.
Don't you think we need to know the answer to at least to the Justice Department's position on that issue in order to decide this case? Because if a president has the authority to pardon himself before leaving office and the D.C. Circuit is right that there is no immunity from prosecution, won't the predictable result be that presidents on the last couple of days of office are going to pardon themselves from anything that they might have been conceivably charged with committing?
So, Lydia, finally, we've gotten to the tea leaves portion of the podcast. You've mentioned that you think there's at least three justices who want to remand this back down. Do you think that there's more than three? It sounds like there probably is.
Potentially. I think it was hard to read maybe where Justice Gorsuch was going, but definitely Justice Barrett was a wild card during this argument. You know, it seemed like she didn't believe that Trump should get the kind of blanket immunity that he was asking for. You know, she seemed to think that that was too much. But, you know, then at the same time, you know, she did ask questions that maybe seems to think that the lower court should be sorting this sort of out, like what is an official versus an unofficial act. So I could see her maybe siding with, you know, the other justices on sending this case back.
Is it too soon to say that Justice Barrett maybe has maverick status, that she's a bit of a you know, wild card on the bench? Because as you mentioned, you know, here it was hard to tell which way she was leaning. In Wednesday's case over abortion and emergency medical care, she also seemed to be hard to figure out. You know, what does this say about her and her argument style and just where she sits on the court now?
That's right. So I think, you know, Justice Barrett might be really charting her own course here, at least during the arguments. Now we have to see what happens with the opinions, because it's one thing to, you know, join the liberals during the arguments and hammering, you know, one party in a case and then, to, you know, to side with the more conservatives when, you know, it all shakes out in the opinion. So we'll have to see where she comes down. But it does seem like she is kind of making her own way here.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a really interesting question. It's a really interesting case. And I'm really fascinated to see how this shakes out when the opinion comes down. And it has to be probably at the end of the term, right, you would imagine?
Yeah, I imagine we'll get decisions in Trump's case and also that abortion-related case that you were talking about before the end of June. So they're done with arguments, but we still have a lot of opinions to go. It seems like we're getting those at a pretty slow clip. So lots of news still to come. But I think that's going to do it for today, David. We'll be back next week, hopefully, with some new opinions to talk about. But until then, you can follow along with all the latest Supreme Court news at news.bloomberglaw.com.
Finding relevant docket filings is crucial to winning your case. That's why Bloomberg Law is here to help you pinpoint winning arguments faster than before. Our best-in-class docket coverage just got better with enhanced AI-driven search and analytics, lightning-fast customized alerts, and expanded state court coverage. And we've substantially increased our litigation news coverage, so you'll never miss a beat. Don't miss the tools smart litigators rely on. Visit pro.bloomberglaw.com today and get everything you need to secure big wins.